Thanks for being here.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. If you have a question for Mayor Dennis, call us at 765-496-1999, or you can send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your question to WBAA News on Twitter. That's at WBAANEWS. Hello, Mayor Dennis. Thanks for being here again.
My pleasure.
Thank you. I'm going to start out with the sewage interceptor project. Hmm. The big project affecting people in West Lafayette in the last month is probably this big sewage project going on River Road at the bottom of Chauncey Hill, adding a pipe to make sure wastewater doesn't overflow into the Wabash River before it goes to the treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
What is the status of this project, and do you see it getting done on time?
Well, it's always difficult to say whether it can get done on time. Now, we are anticipating that it does. But the fact of the matter is that this is a project that is being directed by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Quite clearly, we're going through a process, as most communities are, of making sure that there's a separation between their clear water and their sanitary. And in the city of West Lafayette, because of the exponential growth that we've had over the past few years, our flow levels are increasing significantly. And if you had asked me 10 years ago that and if I'd be talking on live radio about sewage, I would have felt that you were somewhat challenged, but I guess reality is what reality is. But the fact of the matter is that we're in a position now where we're obligated to go ahead and trying to remedy some of that. Quite clearly, with the ever-changing target that IDEM presents to us, we are trying to do the best that we can with what we've got. The State Street project is a direct result of that. If you remember, this has been a multi-phased conversation that we've had with our public, and also something that's been handled legislatively through our council. Most specifically, we've had a rate increase that specifically addresses this issue. And the result of that rate increase is going to be this product that we're putting into the ground right now. And kind of the cool thing about it is it's sort of a different way to approach dealing with your sanitary and your sewage runoff. What we're doing is we're actually putting a great big storage tank into the ground. And that's basically what people are being inconvenienced by now, is the process of planting that tank into the ground in such a way that it's not going to be intrusive, there's not going to be any odors affiliated with it, and it's going to empower us to actually store some of our runoff and then pump it through our facility at a rate that our facility can handle. Because quite clearly, if you look at things in the analytical way that our utility director, Dave Henderson, does, there's only so many million gallons per day that you can handle through your utility. And what that means is that in order for it to be legally discharged into the Wabash, it has to be relatively clean. And it requires a rather involved chemical sanitation process in order to be able to do so. But again, that is at a predictable and specific flow rate. And when you just open up the floodgates, for instance, if you have a great big rainfall and you open up the floodgates, that obviously prohibits that, and you have a lot of what they call an overflow, and that's when raw sewage goes into the Wabash, and that's something that none of us want to have happen. So what we're doing is we're putting this great big tank into the ground, and we're going to connect it to some of the areas that aren't nearly as efficiently served as some of our other areas in the city of West Lafayette. And it's going to allow the gravity to take that flow, take it downhill, put it into the storage tank, and there's a pumping system in the storage tank, and then it will release that flow to a utility where it can be properly treated and properly released into the Wabash.
And I know that is very important for many people, but what's probably on lots of people's mind is, how long is this road going to be closed? And so I know that the tentative date for completion has been set for May.
Mm-hmm.
Can you offer any kind of predictions? Like, will we be able to get up that hill in May? Or,
well, again, that particular area, which is under construction now, is the most invasive part. You know, we're still going to be laying pipes. There's still going to be road closures. There's still going to be a lot of inconveniences on the part of the community. But weather being one issue we can't control, what's underneath the concrete as we dig is another issue we can't control. One of the things that happens naturally in the state of Indiana because of the composure of our soil is water leaches through that soil, and then when you go below a certain level underground, it all decides to come back and then reintroduce itself to you. And that's one of the challenges that we're having right now, is we're going to have to There's a word that Mr. Henderson uses. I believe it's dewater the hole, which either means we're going to have to pump it out, and that requires that we pump it out. We put it into a filtration system so that it can be released into the Wabash in a pure form. So that's one of the challenges that we have now. And then when the rain increases, when we have a significant rain experience, we then need to go through a similar process as well. That'll slow us down. This actual part of this process should only take about a month. So the May target date for getting the roads opened up again is relatively accurate, fingers crossed and knocking on wood. But the reality of it is that, and I'm sure that everybody's aware of this, this is just the beginning of about 3 years worth of incredibly invasive heavy construction. This is sort of the precursor to the State Street project. So, as always, we say, okay, what you're learning now, the lessons that you're learning now, we hope that you will remember when we start tearing up State Street in earnest. And we have tried to do everything we can in regards to this project to both educate the community and also educate ourselves in trying to make sure that traffic flows most smoothly and that pedestrian traffic flows smoothly as well. We've realized that probably most specifically on Thursday evening, there's a real serious migration from the west end of campus towards the east end of campus, most specifically on the other side of the other side of North River Road. And we want to make sure that that crossing is as safe as can be.
And I'm happy that you brought this up, because my next question is, this is sort of a little version of what potentially is going to happen with the State Street project. Is this giving the city a better idea of what to expect once we get into that more intensive, invasive construction with that project? And is it giving you any insights of how to deal with those inevitable detours and traffic problems?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of these traffic situations, a lot of the detours, a lot of the reroutes are designed by traffic engineers. And so there's a presumption that these guys know exactly what they're doing and that they can go ahead and predict traffic flow regardless of what the conditions are. Where we come into a challenge is behavior of drivers. And unfortunately, drivers oftentimes have a very specific timed route to get from point A to point B. We all do it. You know, when you're leaving the garage at a certain date, you'll get to, or a certain time, you'll get to work at another time.
8:21.
There you go.
I do it too, just like I do,
Sarah. I know exactly when I'm going to get there. But the unfortunate reality of it is that when those routes are changed, it requires people to rethink their route. And oftentimes people really do believe that barricades are only suggestions, that they're not really indicating the fact that that road either doesn't exist anymore or it's going to go away in a real quick period of time. We're trying to get them to rethink how they get to work. So that's the biggest challenge that we have. Oftentimes, we put maps on the internet. We're actually advocating people use the new Waze app, the Waze app. You folks do an amazing job of keeping people aware of what's going on. And because of what's going on both sides of the river, both in Lafayette and West Lafayette, it's becoming abundantly clear to all of us that people are reluctantly accepting the new paths of travel to get from point A to point B, but they're also being very vocal in empowering us to make some more informed decisions. Because again, what might be a great route for a vehicle might not necessarily be a great route for a pedestrian, and the other way around.
So. When you say that they're making suggestions, can you give any examples?
No, because I don't believe you have a 5-second delay on what I say, so I got to be careful. I'm teasing, Sarah. Yeah, generally what it is they just realize that some of these routes aren't being very efficiently used. There's some connector routes that sometimes might be better utilized. And also the other way. Oftentimes when we go ahead and look at sort of a map, or we look at an aerial view of the community, we'll go ahead and design routes that might cut through neighborhoods. And unfortunately, when high traffic volumes flow through basically neighborhood streets, it creates challenges for folks that are trying to get out of their driveway, for kids that are trying to get to and from school. And sometimes when you look at peak traffic flows, depending upon which day of the week and what time of the day that you look at those things, it could create either a false positive or a false negative. So it's always great to get that driver input to know if we needed to maybe change a route or look at a different way of getting the traffic around town.
And I'm interested in that you brought up pedestrian input too, because I know that the pedestrian diversion goes up a very, very steep hill on Howard Street. And I've been riding my bicycle to try to get around this construction. And I ride a single speed, and it isn't exactly the easiest way to get up that hill. And so I don't know, have you had any pedestrian input from people who are using these reroute?
We have, not a bunch, but we have. And oftentimes it's both that. It's not necessarily the challenge physically to get from point A to point B, but it's the reality of there. A lot of times certain roads are dedicated as bike paths. We have a lot of bike trails, both designated by being separated from the road and others that share the road. And oftentimes what we get from like Bike Lafayette and other bicyclist groups is it's not safe. And so when we realize that we're partnering up in a very narrowed space of concrete, a bike and a car, we're always going to defer to the bike to make sure that it's going to be safe. And if we need to reroute a bike, even though it might be physically challenging to get to the top of that hill, we hope that you think of the reward when you're going home and hope that your brakes aren't wet.
Uphill both ways.
Uphill both ways.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA 920 AM and WBAA.org, sitting in with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. I'm going to change direction a little bit and mm-hmm. talk about more infrastructure in this mm-hmm. show, about the potential bridge tax.
Mm-hmm.
The county commissioners have floated the idea of establishing a new bridge tax to pay for maintenance to existing county bridges. Can you explain to listeners why an increase might be needed? Isn't there already money in the budget for bridge maintenance?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a county responsibility. The county, Tippecanoe County government, is responsible for all the bridges in Tippecanoe County. And, excuse me, there's been a recent transition from the state where they're sort of getting out of some of the local roads and streets business. And so when they go ahead and relinquish the roads to local government, then we are financially responsible for them. Now, a bridge, by definition, a major bridge, is any span that covers, you know, water or a valley over 100 feet in length. And we have, I used to know the number, but I can't. We have a bunch of them, suffice it to say. And the bridge maintenance budget that has been ongoing with Tippecanoe County is allocated specifically for that. That's all they do with that money, is they fix bridges, they repair bridges. But with the increase in the number of bridges and with the increase in cost of repairing those bridges, it's incumbent upon us to look at additional ways to sort of add revenue to that. So what that means is they will look at what the additional revenue, they're going to look at a way to increase that tax in a way that's going to be the least burdensome to the contributing entities, which is the City of Lafayette, City of West Lafayette, and some of the other governmental entities within that purview. We are going to be sitting down and having a conversation with those folks to figure out what the adverse impact is going to be to the cities. But we're all pretty much, you know, in agreement with the fact that it needs to be done. And I think we've learned a lesson via the state of what happens when you don't maintain bridges. And we do not want that to happen in Tippecanoe County.
I'm wondering if these lower gas prices have anything to do with the amount of money available for bridge maintenance. I know, you know, I don't know how much the county itself receives from mm-hmm. gas taxes, mm-hmm. but with a decrease in prices for gas, is that harming the budget for bridge maintenance?
Well, not necessarily, because remember, that is a specific and definitive line item that's funded through basically a different taxation process. And so the gasoline tax, although that contributes to roads and streets, the bridge fund is somewhat separate from that. Now, quite clearly, you can look at it from the offsetting component of that, but the biggest thing that we need to worry about now is just making sure with the additional bridges and with the condition that they're in that we get them fixed up and we do it in the best way possible.
And this would only be for major bridges, correct? This
mm-hmm. proposed. Well, by definition, it's that those spans that are of at least 100 feet.
Mm-hmm. And an example of that kind of bridge, would that be maybe like the Union Street Bridge mm-hmm. over that? So that would be an example of a major bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Just for our listeners' benefit. Mm-hmm. So I know that you said we've seen what happens. You know, I'm assuming you're talking about what happened last year and that debacle with I-65. Mm-hmm. Would you support a tax increase for bridges? What's your current perspective?
Well, generally speaking, I don't know. We would have to look at, because there's all these different mechanics that go into the taxation process here in our community and actually in the state of Indiana. And a tax increase oftentimes is predicated on your ability to raise those tax. And with circuit breakers and property tax caps, there's just certain things that we cannot do. And that's why this conversation between the county commissioners and us mayors is so important. You know, Tony and I, and then Tom, Dave, and Tracy are going to basically have this conversation in earnest to see what that specific impact is going to be. A number that was shot to me conversationally was it was going to be around $220,000, $230,000 collectively each year that's going to be added to the bridge fund. But the actual distribution of that has not yet been determined. And I know that they're looking at that very closely over at the county to see what that's going to be. And that'll be basically what this conversation is going to be about.
So, yeah, and I the concern, I believe, is the property tax increase could put those tax caps into effect. Mm-hmm. That would decrease the amount of revenue going mm-hmm. to certain
Yeah, once you hit that circuit counties. Breaker, that's, yes.
And so that's what you mean by circuit mm-hmm. breaker. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, is there a tipping point at what amount of revenue loss would make you say, no, not worth it, let's think of another solution?
Well, obviously, I'd have to talk to my folks as well, but the fact of the matter is that you're looking at an essential service. What do you do? If not that, what? You know, do we let bridges go into disrepair? Do we start closing down roads? Do we start looking at other funding opportunities that could involve things that could be more harmful? And, you know, one of the things that we take an oath to do is to make sure that our public is safe, that they're looked after well. And when you look at roads and streets, and you can tell by what we've been doing around here on both sides of the river lately, that's a priority.
Mm-hmm. And so you said maybe looking at other sources of revenue. What else could pay for bridge maintenance? And you said maybe that would be more harmful. What mm-hmm. exactly were you thinking of?
Well, generally speaking, when you're looking at doing anything, whether it be through local government or even in the private sector, you could look at partnerships, public-private partnerships. And oftentimes, like what we're doing with the State Street Project, those kind of concepts are still relatively new in the state of Indiana, but it could be something that could be explored. And again, our experience with State Street has been very positive, so that could be an option. But the fact of the matter is that requires some arrangements and agreements that might not be statutorily supported throughout the state of Indiana. Again, local government, the cities are not in the bridge building business. You know, we built the one with the assistance of the county on Lindbergh Road. And that's one that is covered by the bridge fund. If that should fail or there should be some repair work that needs to be done, it would come out of that fund.
Yeah, I'm interested in that you used the word harmful, though. Were you talking in specifically about these public-private partnerships and what potentially could come out of those?
No, not necessarily. Just you need to make sure that it's statutorily supported.
Okay,
that's
yeah,
basically.
So, yes, you're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. This is Sarah Fenton, reporter talking to West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. I'm going to ask you about some news coming out of the Wabash Landing development, somewhat big news for the landing down by the river. Uh-huh. The West Lafayette Redevelopment Commission approved a preliminary agreement to funnel property taxes generated by a 115-unit apartment building on the north side of the Wabash Landing back into developing that apartment building. There had previously been plans for a hotel in that space. Chris Maritsivica wrote a story about that. Those plans had fallen through. So what's different this time around?
Well, basically, it's just a revisit of an existing concept. The folks that own that stretch of the landing have come to the realization that marketing plan that they originally had for that wasn't that successful. And if there's one thing that we know about West Lafayette is that apartment spaces generally go at a premium. And we also know that because of the high rental rates around here, having a greater saturation or at least having more units available helps keep that cost down. And plus, that's a pretty hot area. A lot of folks like to live in that particular area. So the developer felt that it was probably in the best interest of that east end of Wabash Landing to go ahead and try that new product line.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, you mentioned that you think that there is a demand for renters. It's not exactly right by campus. And from talking with planners, I know that housing close to campus is the thing that most people are looking for. So what makes the city think that there is a demand for apartments down by the river?
Well, we have realized that there is, you know, staying close to campus is somewhat subjective. You know, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to get from point A to point B with public transportation and all that, and we've had that conversation before. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that our student population is relatively mobile. And with what we're doing with not just the State Street plan, but with the Riverfront Project, when you look at the apartments that are on on North River Road at Williamsburg, some of the ones that are actually behind the development at the Levee Plaza, it's fairly geographically close. I mean, access is pretty close compared to some of the apartments that are up on 52 and some of the apartments that are over on 52, even on the east side. So we feel pretty comfortable that this would be a place that would be in high demand. And also, the rental market isn't exclusively for students. Mm-hmm. You know, we're coming to the realization that there are a lot of professors and their families that are choosing to live in an apartment because of whatever project or whatever research they're doing over in the university. And then the other side of it is that the student housing market is changing radically. I mean, there is a great deal of interest in bringing in and densifying campus and bringing the students in that closer sphere of campus, which includes that area around Wabash Landing.
How do you see the State Street redevelopment potentially affecting that part of the city, the Wabash Landing?
Oh, it's going to be phenomenal. That was one of the major goals of the State Street project. We have felt that there were two issues that were really of a concern to us. First off was the connectivity between the cities. We want to make sure that the Wabash River, and this is getting to be a cliche of mine now, is more of a zipper than a barrier. And Chris, quit laughing. And we also want to try and make sure that the intersection at State and North River Road is safe. Unfortunately, over the past, I've been here for a long time, but we often have had situations involving pedestrians and vehicles on that intersection because it's just it's a major thoroughfare and it shouldn't be a place where pedestrians have to cross. So we're going to go ahead and work on that, and it's going to be in a position now to where it's going to be much more safe. The traffic's going to be slowed, and it'll be much easier for pedestrians to get back and forth. And so we feel that that's obviously going to be key to the success of that area.
I know right now it seems like there are two different developments almost. On one end, closer to State Street, it seems like there's always a bunch of people. And then on the other side, it seems not exactly empty, but definitely.
On the far west side.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So why is it important for the city to develop that area?
Well, the west end of State Street is the best way to think of this, in kind of a generic way, is the new downtown West Lafayette. Just think of that from Grant Street to the river. You know, that's where we're going to have our commerce area. That's going to be basically the hub of our new downtown. From, and let's just say, McCormick, our Airport Road, all the way to 231. That's going to be the area where we're utilizing the partnership with Purdue University to sort of reinvent development in the state of Indiana. That's where we're going to have a lot of very high-end, very world-renowned developments out that way. Rolls-Royce is a great one to start with. We're also looking to create something similar to the village concept, if you remember married student housing and all that sort of stuff, something like a living area, residential areas, mixed use with residential and retail, and sort of just bring a population shift towards that area that they're going to be able to. And again, the whole focus is be able to work, learn, and play in West Lafayette.
My final question is in relation to Happy Hollow Road. It's a question from someone in our newsroom. Happy Hollow Road is still closed. What's the status of that project? And wouldn't completing it potentially relieve some of the pressure that's diverted traffic from River Road and in the future the State Street project?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one thing about Happy Hollow Road and a lot of these construction is, again, the presumption is that we basically roll up the old road and unroll a new road. And there couldn't be anything further from the truth. You know, we are looking to basically take the slope out of Happy Hollow Road. We're looking at adding a trail system. We're looking at removing, I don't know if you've seen it, but it looks like we have a bunch of caged rocks on one side. And basically, they're gabions, or the cages, and riprap is what's inside of them. That's the rocks. And I learned that from an engineer, so I know it's true. But the fact of the matter is we have to completely relocate that hill so we can put our trail system there. So it's not just a matter of improving an existing road. It's a matter of taking a road up and putting a brand new road there, very similar to what we did on Cumberland Avenue. And that takes time. And then again, the only thing that we can't control is Mother Nature. We could be anticipating a beautiful day and it could rain or it could snow or we could have freezes or something to that effect. And then also what's underneath it, there's a lot of instability with soil. And so we need to make sure that that's all taken care of. So it's a very timely process. And the fact of the matter is that, yes, our hope is to have that done so we can reroute traffic that way. The completion date, I believe, is late this construction year. And so if we are able to have two-way traffic on that road again by then, we should be in good shape come the State Street project time.
So when you say late this construction year, I don't speak engineer. So
I didn't for a long time, and my engineer argues that I still don't. So
what does that mean, like October, November?
Yeah, October, November. Usually the folks that make the asphalt and stuff stop doing that towards the end of the year.
And when are you anticipating construction on State Street beginning? That's later this year, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll start seeing some stuff moving around later this year.
And later this year, like fall?
Probably towards the fall. Again, we want to make sure, you're all right. We do try to have some level of predictability with these projects, and we don't like to have them basically interface each other when it comes to being inconvenient. So we hopefully will get a lot of what's being done with the CSO project and sort of buttoned up a little bit, and then we can move forward with the State Street project.
And just for clarification, the CSO project is the sewer project.
Yeah, that's
the bottom
tank
of
that's
River
the
Road.
Mm-hmm. That's what's inconveniencing you now.
Well, I guess just as a person that moves around in Lafayette, in the greater Lafayette area, sometimes it does seem frustrating, and I know I'm not the only person, because it seems like all the construction somehow seems to happen at the same time.
Oh, it does. And again, that's seasonal. That's because oftentimes you do it so that you can get the best price, and you get the best price during the construction season. And then for some of us, like in local government here, it's a revenue stream issue. Sometimes you allocate funding for a specific project, and then depending upon some of your funding sources, whether it's a federal grant or something to that effect, you're obligated to spend those funds within a certain time window. So we move out to when it's going to be the most efficient insofar as construction goes and the most effective insofar as spending our taxpayers' dollars.
We have about 45 seconds left. Really quickly, what advice might you have for people trying to navigate all this construction?
Yeah, man. If you're on bikes or walking, please pay attention to the signs. Pay attention to the gates. Don't violate the gates. They're up there for a very specific reason. If you have suggestions how to make it better, please let us know. If you're in a car, trust your instincts. The barrels are there for a purpose. And it could change from day to day. One day a road could be one way, then it could be two ways the next day. Just pay attention to where you're going. And if you have any problems, please give us a call over here in West Lafayette.
All right. Those were all the questions that we have. You can listen to a rebroadcast of this program tonight at 7 on AM 920. Also, you can find archived versions of Ask the Mayor with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Frankfort, and Crawfordsville online at WBAA.org. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks to Sue Hill for manning the phones. Also, thank you, John Dennis, and to our producer, Chris Marizzi-Vizza, today. Thank you to our listeners.
Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership. Ann Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com. And Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.